here in Washington, myself and Joe Matthew have had our eyes on what was coming up in New York next week. It was supposed to be on July 11th, the sentencing of former President Donald Trump, who, of course, has been convicted of 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. Then the Supreme Court threw a bit of a wrench in that plan yesterday, ruling in part that Donald Trump has at least presumptive immunity from official acts taken while in office. And now Trump and his defense team contend that that means the New York case should get thrown out.
Yeah. So cancel your plans for the 11th. We will not be talking about a sentencing. We'll be packing our bags for the Republican National Convention.
Yes.
Pretty remarkable. As we bring in Elizabeth Wydra, this day after the Supreme Court ruled, and we're already feeling the ripple effects, as Kaylee just said, legally and certainly politically. Elizabeth is Constitutional Accountability Center president and Supreme Court litigator, has been there before and joins us once again now. Elizabeth, it's great to have you back here. A lot of folks are using their imaginations on what this means for the presidency more immediately, and I'd love for you to weigh in on that as we talk this out here on Bloomberg TV and radio. More immediately, we're seeing the impact of this ruling even on a state level case like this in New York. Do you think Donald Trump will be sentenced in New York before the election?
You know, this case, honestly, it has in part been extraordinary for many reasons, but the delay that it has caused in the criminal cases against Donald Trump continues to have its effect. So with respect to his January 6th trial that this appeal came out of, that case obviously has been delayed for months and months and is unlikely to go forward before the presidential election. And then, as we're seeing in the sentencing in the New York state case, we're going to see a delay there as well. Even after a jury of former President Trump's peers found him guilty on 34 felony counts. And that's because the Supreme Court's immunity ruling yesterday from this conservative supermajority didn't just grant really breathtakingly sweeping absolute immunity for core official actions and then presumed immunity for official actions sort of within the outer perimeter of what could count as an official action. They also said that if you are being prosecuted for private conduct for which you don't have immunity, if there's evidence that's relevant to that private conduct, so this New York State fraud case is private conduct, if there's evidence that comes out of an official context, so like communicating with your aides, et cetera, that can't even be presented in the aid of those charges that can be brought even under this immunity ruling. So that prevents certain evidence from being presented. And that's what Trump's motion in the New York courts will focus on, that without the evidence that relates to his official conduct, his conversations with aides, his communications with the public while he was in office, without that evidence, you can't support the criminal charges based on his private conduct. So the conservative Supreme Court majority's ruling on the immunity case is so sweeping. We're already seeing its effects. And as the dissents noted, the potential dangers for our democracy are real and are frankly terrifying.
Well, and that's something we were speaking with, Elizabeth, Democratic Congressman Seth Moulton about earlier this hour. He described how his ancestors came to the colonies originally to escape a tyrannical king, the British monarchy, and that in some ways he saw the Supreme Court as taking a step back toward that direction on this week in which we're celebrating the Declaration of the Independence from Great Britain. To what extent is that actually true and not hyperbole, Elizabeth? Has this effectively made the president more like a king, or is the court reinforcing what was already constitutionally understood to be true?
So unfortunately, I don't think it's hyperbole. You know, one of the kind of principles of the founding of our nation was that no one would be a king in this country. Even the most powerful executive elected officer, the president of the United States, would in many ways be as an equal with the people who elected them. And the idea that no one is above the law is so central to that idea of equal justice and equal citizenship and democracy that this ruling really works a shift in the very understanding of the office of the presidency under the American Constitution. So before, there were certainly some understandings of ways in which the president would not be the same as, you know, you and me before the courts. There's generally an understanding that you couldn't criminally indict a sitting president, although you could after they left the office. You know, there were all these different ways in which the president's ability to act was protected, but never was there ever contemplated this absolute immunity in these core functions and the outer perimeter of official conduct. In fact, it was very clear at the time of the drafting of the Constitution that the framers of our Constitution were well aware of how to write in immunities when they wanted it. They knew that some colonial era governors had some criminal immunity, and they specifically chose not to include that because they wanted the president to be like their fellow citizens, subject to American criminal laws if they violate the law, because they are a person just like the rest of us. We don't have hereditary lines. We don't have, you know, divine right of kings. And this ruling really upends that understanding. And it is very dangerous because, as you know, the saying goes, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it's perhaps even more important for the president to be subject to criminal liability when they act with their utmost power, because that's when they can really abuse that power if they so choose. And so what the court has done is really given a dangerous blank check to future presidents, well, and I guess the current president as well, to presidents going forward from yesterday, to really act with impunity. And you know, some of the not hyperbolic, unfortunately, examples from the dissents were, okay, so it's a core executive function to be able to remove the president to be able to remove his attorney general. Well, what if he decides to remove him by poisoning him to death? Then he can't be criminally prosecuted for that. That is just crazy, not the technical legal term, but legally insupportable.
Well, it sounds like you're letting your imagination go there too, Elizabeth. Tim O'Brien writing for Bloomberg Opinion that this ruling invites presidents to commit crimes. And with that in mind, what does the court think about this idea of sentencing a president, even though it's a state court? If Donald Trump is sentenced and wins election, is he still going to be meeting with a probation officer while he's at the White House or wearing an ankle bracelet?
Well, you know, the New York case is interesting because it is a state proceeding. And in our federalist system, we have different systems of justice for the federal criminal docket and the state docket. So, you know, the January 6th case, it's very important that it try to occur before the election because, again, it's a case brought by the DOJ. And so if Trump were elected, he could simply order his DOJ to drop the case against him. The New York case is different because technically, the president does not have authority over the New York state justice system. But, you know, I think at the very least, the conservative Supreme Court's immunity decision is going to delay and delay and delay that case to the point that he might not be sentenced before the presidential election. And then, of course, you have all these additional layers of how do you, if Trump were to win the election, how do you deal with potential sentencing? We just have never been there before. It's unprecedented, like so many things we're talking about today.
Well, we focused so much of the conversation over the course of the last 24 hours and change, Elizabeth, on what Donald Trump could do if he does indeed win in November. But we have a president in the meantime, and President Biden did weigh in on this decision from the Supreme Court yesterday. Just take a listen to what he said, and then I have a question for you.
I know I will respect the limits of the presidential powers I have for 3.5 years. But any president, including Donald Trump, will now be free to ignore the law. I concur with Justice Sotomayor's dissent today. Here's what she said. She said, in every use of official power, the president is now a king above the law. With fear for our democracy, I dissent. End of quote. So should the American people dissent. I dissent.
Elizabeth, he began that sentence with, I know I will respect the limits of the presidential powers I have for 3.5 years. But given what the court ruled yesterday, could Joe Biden theoretically act against Donald Trump as a political opponent without fear of prosecution if he was doing so in an official capacity? I mean, what power has this given him while he is still president, at least for the next 6 months?
Yes, you know, I think if we're talking purely legally, based on the legal standard mm-hmm. that was articulated by the majority in the Supreme Court in their decision, yes, I do think he could take all sorts of actions against Donald Trump as a political rival. You know, one of the hypotheticals in the court was, could a president using his military or official function order Navy SEAL team to assassinate a political rival? And I think they would be immune from criminal prosecution. As wild as it seems to articulate those words, I think they would be immune from criminal prosecution based on the conservative Supreme Court's ruling yesterday. Now, of course, President Biden says, I will respect the limits that we have understood to be on the president's power. But the whole point of drafting the Constitution the way it was an understanding that we were never going to have a government of angels. We were going to have a government of human beings who are flawed. And we didn't want to depend on people being good, honest people and not being willing to act in their own selfish best interests and perhaps for evil purposes. And so the fact that the Supreme Court is hoping that, I guess, the American people not elect someone who would act in that way to the presidency going forward, or that a person would themselves decide to hold back and not use the terrible authority that they've now been given by the Supreme Court ruling, that's just not the way the Constitution was supposed to work. So, you know, this ruling is really very ahistorical, you know, from a conservative court that seems to be bound by the Constitution's text and history. The founders of the Constitution would be aghast at this ruling. And it really has no basis other than in the conservative supermajority's views about what a president needs in order to take, as they said, bold action. But I would be far more concerned about the structure of American democracy and the need to make sure that no one is above the law. That's not reflected in the ruling that we saw from the majority yesterday on the court.
Well, I'm glad we could spend some time talking about it. Elizabeth Wydra has been great with us as long as this case has been rolling, and it's great to have you back. President, Constitutional Accountability Center, Elizabeth Wydra, thank you for the time here on Bloomberg TV and radio.